New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Go for it.
My name is Sadiq. Sadiq Tsukugi. I don't know why I say that. I'm not James Bond or something, but... But I'm a Mississippi transplant at this point. I've been here, this is my third year, by way of Lincoln, Nebraska. I spent the first 29 years of my life in Nigeria. I'm Nigeria, pretty Nigerian, and proudly so. I'm a poet. I'm an assistant professor of English at Mississippi State University. I'm a father, a husband, a son, uncle, all of the things, and family is very important to me.
Very good.
All right, I'm going to read a poem titled January 20th, 2024. I quietly love to pay attention, to bear witness, because like recently... it's like incredibly difficult to do that, right? Because like people are not very welcoming to points of views, and just witnessing is being criminalized right now. And you know, as a poet, I think it's my duty to document not just my life, but you know, like some of the things that I'm living through. Because you know, like in the far future, I assume, you know, like people are going to disbelieve, you know, like the reality that we're living through right now. So yeah, January 20th, 2024. Ibtisam says she's hotting like a burning blaze. Her son Abdullah, a victim of an airstrike, will never return to her arms. What is my sorrow compared to hers? Irrelevant. Behind every dead, 100 stories of people who are shattered by absence, on a snowboard, navigating the Red Sea with your troop, you orchestrate a theatrical spectacle of hypocrisy. We all endure the repercussions, a vicious taste squeezed into the mouth of the world. We're unheeding spectators, the street bear witness, solely when the slain belongs to its own tribe. We, dwellers in the pyre of a bedlam, persist in stoking its flames. As the fire diminishes, we persist in drawing everyone in like a stream of kerosene. And in the dirge of wind, in the woozy business of fire, we all become ashes.
Thank you, Sadiq.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. We are at Mars, the McGowan Art Retreat and Studio. During this time, we have Sadiq here with us for a week. I understand you're here to work, and this is a great place to listen and collect your thoughts. Is today your arrival?
Yeah, I am arrived today. My wife and 4-year-old daughter, she just turned 4 yesterday.
Well, happy birthday.
Yesterday actually she was singing to herself in the shower and she was like, happy birthday to me. I'm like, oh, look at you, narcissist. Yeah, she is. Very well, much so.
Very good. Well, Sadiq, just tell me a little bit more about yourself. How long would you stay in Nigeria before you would come over to the States?
Yeah, I was there for 29 years. Actually, I left Nigeria on my 29th birthday. I don't know how true this is, but I felt like, you know, like we're traveling back in time, and somewhere in the air, I must have had another birthday, because like Nigeria is like 7 hours ahead of
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know, it was the longest birthday I've ever had.
Well, what made you want to come here to America?
I mean, I was actually thinking about that in the shower. It's funny that you'd ask that. Today's the 2017. 21 days after her first birthday, we lost our daughter, Baha. She was the reason why I wanted to come. I had like a beautiful job back in Nigeria. I was walking development walk, and I was meeting, you know, like very important people, politicians. Mm-hmm. And I was losing myself, you know, like in all of that interaction. This is not to say they're bad people, but you know, like it's like a different kind of world. And I'm a quite, you know, like slow-paced person. I've always been a writer, and I was losing touch with that part of myself in the world of politics and development world.
I relate to that. the job that I work during the day is heavily influenced by politics, mm-hmm. and it's very easy to lose yourself because I'm a public servant, mm-hmm. and so I'm held accountable to the people, mm-hmm. and whatever. The city here decides I have to go by that.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And
so I understand.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, like, it was great in the context of Nigeria. You know, like I was being paid well for somebody my age. But I wanted to be more, and not just for myself, but, you know, like for my daughter. She was, you know, like our second child. I had a son before her. He's 10 now, but you know, like with daughters, they just hit differently, and I just wanted to be, for the very first time, you know, like then I was like truly responsible for someone else, you know, like started thinking about others other than myself, and I wanted to be the best version of myself, not for me but for her.
Sure.
And so I asked myself, you know, like what am I doing here, you know, like I want to be more. And I've always been a writer since I was 12 or 11 thereabout. And I thought, you know, like maybe it's something, you know, like to further. And I started looking at graduate schools. And so I applied. I think I finished my application for Nebraska, University of Nebraska.
What made you choose there?
I had worked with somebody who, you know, like go on to be my American father. there's an African Poetry Book Fund. They have like a chapbook series where they publish every year 10 to 11 new generation African poets, you know, like so poets on the continent, you know, like to just introduce them to the larger world, because, you know, like there's a third of, you know, like African voice in the literary space in the world. So Kwame Dawes, who runs the initiative, published me, you know, like to be included in this New Generation African Poetry Book Fund. And so I worked with him on that project. And so when I applied to University of Nebraska, and also like applied to University of Mississippi and other schools that I'm blanking out on right now. But I got into a couple of schools, but Nebraska afforded me 6 years full funding with a more robust package altogether. And it was like a PhD program, while Ole Miss was a master's, mm-hmm. Program. So it's like easy sell, because I've already worked with Kwame Dawes, and he's like a professor there. So I went there, and I think, you know, like that was like the right decision. But I felt like, you know, like Mississippi has been calling me since that time because it was like actually a tough choice. I did want to go to Nebraska, but, you know, I also enjoyed the interaction with the professors, you know, like at Ole Miss. They were incredibly generous. And so it was like hard to actually turn them down. But I believe, you know, like Mississippi would forgive me because I'm back here. So
yeah. I wanted to back up. You said you began writing at the age of 12.
Yeah.
What do you think helped guide you at such an early age to begin writing, and what would you write about?
Yeah, well, I couldn't read until I think about 10 or 11, which was bad. And so all the kids in the neighborhood would make fun of me. And so I started to read, and pretty quickly I wanted to do more than just read. I wanted to write, so, you know, like people can read what I have written, just to get back on, you know, like my friends that, hey, I'm not just reading now, I'm also like writing. And my dad is a poet, my mom too, and so it was easy to get connected with, you know, like the national newspaper in Nigeria. You know, I'd send them stories, and they would publish a story here, a poem there. That sustained me at that particular time.
Were these true stories, or?
Yeah, just my feelings, you know. I love to pay attention to my environment and just, you know, like some experiences. And sometimes, you know, just to get back at people, you know, like people, when people make fun of me, I would be really mean to them in my poems.
Sure.
As, you know, like as a child, that's the only way I knew how to fight back, you know. And, you know, my memory is very feeble. I forget easy. So, you know, like just as a practice at remaining annoyed, you know, I'd write poems about things that people have done so that I'd read it the next day and remember that they pissed me off so that I can get angry all over again.
I have a question. I have a question about your, you said you didn't really learn to read till you were like 10.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're in Nigeria. What language are you referring to? Mm-hmm. Nigerian, English, or both?
English is the language of instruction in school. It's the official language in Nigeria.
Really?
Yeah, people don't know that.
Well, it's surprising because the poem you read earlier, the words used in there were some we don't hear regularly, let's say. So you really... Sure. You really made some progress.
Yeah. Well, I'd say that, you know, that Nigerians are actually very good at English, right? A lot better than most people who would be considered native speakers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the language in school. It's the same thing. And also, like, we have actually pushed the frontier of, you know, like what English can do. Like in America right now, they would say, you know, like signaling, when in Nigeria we have a cool word for it. It's called trafficate.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful word.
My undergraduate work, it was intercultural studies, and mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time studying other cultures. We did a class. It was two semesters. It was a 1 and 2, and it was... just on Africa,
mm-hmm.
and West Africa, North Africa, East Africa, South Africa. And the way the instructor taught it, we're going to learn the history of Africa,
mm-hmm.
but you're assigned reading, and these weren't books sold at the library on campus. Mm-hmm. You had to get on Amazon. You had to do some digging to find mm-hmm. these books.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, the stories you're going to read in these books are from the losing side of history.
Mm-hmm.
And the history as we know it
mm-hmm.
is told from the winner. So I want you to juxtapose the two
mm-hmm.
and decide for yourself. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting reading the accounts in those books mm-hmm. about what was going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And just to your point, just how poetic and beautiful they would use the English mm-hmm. language in a way that I think Americans and... people take the language for granted because mm-hmm. when it comes to music or using the language, I think a lot of times we fall short and we're not as creative as like what the example you just shared.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like just that, you know, like there's access, you know, like we have like a ton of language and there's like cross-pollination happening between those language. And most of the local languages back home, I speak Hausa and also Nupe and Pidgin, which is like a broken version of standardized English. So like all of those things, and you know, like when you speak multiple language, you'd recognize pretty quickly that English is actually a handicapped language, right? Because there's just,
yes,
yeah, it's unable to carry a lot of experiences.
For example, in French, they have a word for that feeling it is when you're standing at a high place and looking down, mm-hmm. and that urge that people have to jump.
Mm-hmm.
we can't express that.
Yeah.
In one word in English, yeah, and yeah. I do think that is a bit of a failure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what like English takes from about 2,000 languages.
Yeah, like, right.
So and right now as a Nigerian, I, you know, like some of my writing also like incorporate some of those local words, right? And it's all in service of expanding English, and I'm comfortable to say that English is native to me just the way that it's native to like an American speaker, right? I think people like find it difficult to accept that, but it's true. It's as much my language as it is, you know, sure. Like British. I think just last week I was looking at some survey that was like looking at how fluent, you know, like speakers are in Britain. And Nigerians actually place higher than native British, right? Like,
whoa.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, because, you know, like, it's ours too, right? Like,
right.
I have been speaking English since I was four. It's definitely different, right? There's some words that are different. Just in the ways that, you know, like, an Australian is speaking English, you know, it's different from American English, right? It's even different from a Canadian English, right? Or mm-hmm. even British or even Irish. But all of these are Englishes, right?
And yeah, even their, you know, the swears and different. It's very different.
Absolutely. And you cannot take away the influence of the environment, you know, like in the language itself, right? I mean, even in America, I lived in Nebraska, and the English, like, different from the one spoken here in the South, right? Or even if you go to Georgia, right? Mm-hmm. Because like the culture of the place also like impact, you know, like the way that the language is spoken.
When you opened the show, I wanted to unpack that a little bit and just get to know a little bit more about your worldview.
Mm-hmm.
You said family is very important. Mm-hmm. Father, uncle, son. Tell me a little bit about faith. Is faith important to you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider yourself to be spiritual or religious?
Yeah, I'm a very, very spiritual person. I'm Muslim. And that's important to my sense of being, to the way that I see the world. And just spiritual in the sense that, you know, like I am in tune with the environment. I'm in tune with, you know, like the people who embody, you know, like the environment that I'm part of. And so like I recently have started thinking in terms of the familiar bonds that I have. It's not just, you know, like tied by blood, but also like extend to people who are like my people, who are like within the sphere of influence that influence the way that I am. Also, like, influence the way that I see the world. And so, like, I'm nothing without my people, right? And I'm realizing now that even place, you know, like, could be categorized, you know, like, as my people, right? It's weird, but, like, it's still, like, in a spiritual sense, right? Because, like, I'm here right now. And the things that I'm experiencing, even in Starkville, even though I've just been here 3 years, right? Like, it's very important to the person that I would be even tomorrow, right? Because I've gotten, like, some insight from here. I have gotten, you know, like, insight from being in Nebraska for 4 years. I didn't even realize that Nebraska was, like, important to me until I had visited Nebraska after I had left last year. And I was, like, all teary-eyed. And I'm like, well, what's this? You know, like, you've gone so soft, Nebraska, you didn't even like their food.
Get it together, Lincoln.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, like, all of you cannot tell my story, you know, like, without including my time here in Starkville, Mississippi. You cannot tell my story without including my time from when I was in Nebraska, or even, you know, like, when I was in Nigeria. You know, like, it's the cumulative experience, right? The places that I've been to, the things that have impacted me, you know, like, the spaces that I've embodied. You know, like, all of those things are significant to my story when you tell it.
Very cool. What is your favorite way to write or express your ideas? Is it pen and paper, or do you like the tactile with a keyboard, or how do you enjoy getting your thoughts out?
I'm very analog, you know, like, I always move around with paper. I always have notebooks. It's all paper.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, again, speaking about spirituality, you know, I just think there's like a very sacred connection between the pen, my soul, and the page, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like an intimate space. It's vacant, right? But, you know, like, there's a level of intimacy that this is my space. This is a place where no one is going to judge me, right? This is a place where I can have conversation without the burden, you know, like, of the judgmental eyes of people, right? And so I like that because it affords me the impetus to reflect in peace.
If you were going to introduce yourself to a new audience, how would you describe your work? What's the main body of your work?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do not like introduction. I find them to be extremely awkward.
Sure.
But, you know, like, I just tell people that, you know, like, my writing attempts to be like the fossil record of my being. You know, that's just it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
the poem that you open with, the name of it is the date.
Yeah.
And is
January
20th. And that's how you felt that day?
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, but, you know, like, I'm speaking about what's happening in the world.
Sure.
And I see in the ways that, you know, like, it's, I mean, people talk a big game about freedom, you know, like, freedom of expression and all of that, you know, like, fancy words and ideals that you'd expect people to live by. But, you know, like, it's not a very safe world, you know, like, to even tell stories, right? Because that's being criminalized and, you know, like, particularly in the last few years, it's been extremely dangerous even to bear witness or even to tell stories of the things that, you know, like, are happening before our lying eyes. And so as a poet, I'm like, what's my role, right? Like, what intervention am I gonna make? I do know that, you know, like, history is important, and I do know that, you know, like, history is written and spoken by people who basically are oppressors, right? You know, like, even in the context of, you know, like, where I'm from, Africa, you know, like, a lot of people, I've had people who would walk to me and, like, you know, like, oh, Africa, the dark continent. I'm like, no, Africa, you know, like, it's not the dark continent because you do not know about it, right? You know, it exists, there are people there. And I mean, it's like at the center of even civilization, right? You know, because when Europe was warring, you know, like, Africa was already a very sophisticated continent, right?
Sure.
The Egyptians, you know, like, the Nubians, even the Malian Empire, you know, like, there wasn't the need to conquer, you know, like, in the ways that other
civilizations... That's where human history started.
Yeah, have. And so, like, you know, like, we had art, you know, like, we've been doing all of that, you know, like, when Europe was still a warring continent.
Mm-hmm.
But today, you know, like, because of, you know, like, the interaction, the collision between Africa and, you know, like, Europe and even the East, the Middle East, all of that history has been eroded, right? Because, like, we documented our history, you know, in oral literature, right? And so when you want to destroy a people, you know, you strip them of their names, and then you strip them of their stories, and then you strip them of their land, right? And so, like, the act of writing every day, particularly, you know, like the poem that I read, was, you know, like, to fight against that, right? Because I know in the near future, you know, like, they would say that this didn't happen.
Yeah,
right.
But you have it
documented. Yeah. Yeah.
And not only that, like, with the way that you described when you learned how to read and write, it's also, I could feel the fire in the words. I know you just arrived here today, and you have a week here. I'm curious, what is your mindset, and what are you looking to find and do with your time here?
Yeah, I'm currently working on a epic poem. It's a dangerous sport.
12 hours, right?
I actually received notes from my editor a few days ago, and they want me to, you know, like, turn in the work by the 9th. And so I'm going to be using the time to work on that, and also, like, to generate new materials. It's a little book. It's about 130 page poem.
Wow.
Yeah.
Seems like a long poem.
Yeah, it's a long poem. And it's titled Bacandamia, which is a Hausa word that means the praise singer's master poem.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And I know you just arrived today, but, you know, I tell everybody about this place and what Joe has created here. Mm-hmm. It just almost feels like there's something in the air.
Mm-hmm.
It brings the very best out of a creative.
Mm-hmm.
And, and I know your family dropped you off here today, but have you had time to kind of sit back and relax and just kind of let the place take you over?
Yeah. It's a beautiful space, and you're like, incredible thanks to Joe for setting this up. It's beautiful. Like, I posted on my Instagram, you know, like, a lot of my friends around the country asking, oh, where's this beautiful space, you know, like, can we visit? And so maybe I'll be putting a lot of people in touch with you.
And we've only just been in the cabin. So tomorrow, when he has a chance, we'll walk around the rest of the place and really give you a good idea of the whole place. You can use everything, really. So just something to keep in mind.
Yeah. It's a beautiful space. I'm all settled. I mean, as you can see, and, like, I have, you know, like, my books already up there. I don't know what that is called, but, you know, like,
the loft.
Yeah, the loft. It's a very serene space, and, you know, like, if you pip in there, you know, like, you'd see all books scattered, and, you know, like, I've plucked out some of Joe's books, and just, you know, like, doing a quick read. I pick up a book by Robert Frost, and so, like, I'm gonna be enjoying that, and also, like, creating my own work. I've already cooked. Don't ask me what I made. It's just a mixture of beef and, you know, like,
what you had here.
Yeah, bell pepper and onion, and I had it with bread. So,
well, and while we're talking about the place, and I know you'll see more of it tomorrow, but how much of an impact do you think that nature and being able to just step away from technology, how do you think that influences the way that you're able to open up your mind and put pen to paper?
Yeah, I mean, definitely being away and just being in nature, in a place where you can listen more attentively, you know, like, that's very beneficial, because, like, my practice at writing is, you know, like, to pay attention. And I'm always able to do that when I pull out of the noise, you know, like, of the machines, and just what I would call the real world, which is like an illusion, right? Because, like, just fast paced. But, you know, like just being out there and just walking around and transcribing some of the things that I see, because we kind of live in a constant loop of stories, and there's always something to write about. There's always something singing if you pay attention.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
So, you know, like being out here, I am positive, you know, like it's gonna unlock a lot of creative side. Maybe because like this is like my favorite space. It's kind of reason why I enjoy being in Starkville, right? Because like I'm more in tune with nature in ways that I never seem to be when I'm like in big cities, right? I mean, even just being able to walk on bare earth, you know, that's like incredibly useful and keeps me tethered, you know, like to the world in a real visceral way, right? And so, like, I'm super excited. You know, like, I know that I'm gonna generate a lot of work. I mean, a week doesn't seem like a lot, but you know, like, I know that I'd be able to generate a lot in a week because of just the atmosphere. You know, like, it's a really, really incredible space.
Yeah, you seem like you got a great work ethic about you with the editor and with the turnaround you have to create.
Yeah, I actually love pressure. You know, like, I wish that I'm the smartest person in the world when I have that kind of deadline, you know, like when, like 2 days to, and I always tell myself, how can I make this last longer, right? Because if I can, I'd be incredible, but it doesn't happen, you know, like it's just that little time when there's that pressure. Yeah. I've tried, you know, like to activate that superpower, but you know, like I'm always unable to. Like,
I wanted to swap gears with you just for a second. I wanted to ask you a little bit about legacy. Mm-hmm. We've talked about family, mm-hmm. and even you have a lot of published work. Mm-hmm. What do you make of legacy, and is that important to you? And is the body and life of your work more important, or is it, you know, family, or is it a mm-hmm. mix?
I mean, it's all of it, right? Because, like, me as a person is a total sum of it all, right? My writing is important, you know, like my family is important, and you know, like they're not in conflict with one another. You know, I always bring them together. I write about my family, you know, like they participate, you know, like in my writerly activity. If I go to festivals, you know, I go with my wife, and you know, like sometimes, you know, like my daughter, and so that's pretty important to me, because like I cannot be whole without writing, and I cannot be whole without my family, right? And so like they just have no choice but to walk together, right? Because that's how you get the best version of myself, when those worlds they don't collide, you know, like they're in sync with one another.
Sure.
And legacy is important to me. I mean, the book that I am writing, I have been thinking about this book for 4 years, and I have been, you know, like jotting down note about it, line here, fractions there. And I didn't write it until I arrived here in Starkville and I had like a major health scare. Actually did had a surgery, and I hope there's not too much. I had the pacemaker put in because my heart was stopping for 3 seconds when I was
asleep.
Yeah, it was rough my first few months. And so right a day after surgery in Jackson, we returned home and they forgot to give me pain medicine.
Yeah,
they put a thing in my heart and forgot to give me pain medicine. And, you know, like, it was narcotic, so, like, they wouldn't give it to me here. It was incredibly painful.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, and so I was very afraid. I've always been afraid, you know, like, of my own mortality. But, you know, like, it became really real, right? Because literally the heart was stopping and, you know, like, I had the surgery done. And so I was, like, confronted with, you know, like, the fear of death, right? But, you know, like, the thing that I was afraid of, not leaving, but, you know, like, leaving with all of the stories that I had to tell, right? You know, I'm like, I haven't said anything, you know, like, of all the things that I want to say. And I wanted to write this book, but I've always been afraid to confront it, right? Because it's like, it deals with myth, with history, with religion, with Islam. And so I was afraid of writing it, but I started writing the next day with that pain. I was like,
we've got to get these stories.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, like, that's just what I want. I'm like, you know, if I have to go, I have to write this book, you know, like, even if it's halfway. And so when I got, you know, like, halfway through the book, not even halfway, like, I'd written about 40 pages in, you know, like, the first week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally a day after surgery, I started writing. And, you know, like, in a week or so, I had written about 40 pages. And I emailed it to my editor. I'm like, I just want you to have this, right? I didn't tell him that, you know, I thought I was going to die or something.
Yeah, I'm like, leave that out.
Just have this, you know, like, do not open it. Just have it. And so I continued writing, but he did read it. And so he's like, can you send me more of that thing? That's how he said. I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, at that time, I'd already, like, written 90 pages in, like, the first 6 months post-surgery. And so, you know, like, I'm no longer afraid, right? You know, like, because I'm like, I'm going to continue to do the thing that I think I'm here to do. I'm not going to make my grave, you know, like, the most impressive place on earth, right? Because I don't want to go with all of the stories that I have. I am going to tell it so that, you know, like, once I leave, you know, like, I'd continue to speak, you know, like, and who knows, maybe like Robert Frost, I'd live forever.
Yeah, right. And I think about this. I'm a huge music guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one thing, especially, you know, the good die young. Mm-hmm. And I look at some of my favorite songwriters, Justin Townes Earl. And whenever it comes to, it seems like they're working overtime and they're putting out an expansive body mm-hmm. of work. And then next thing, we don't have them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if they knew.
Mm-hmm.
And man, what do you think caused your health? Was it the food, or what do you think happened?
You mean with my?
You sure, if you'd like to share.
I don't even know, but you know, like it's weird, right? I know, you know, like maybe I don't know, but I do know that, you know, like it was. And I know they've made this into like a very controversial thing to say, but I started feeling weird in Nebraska a week after I'd had, you know, like a booster shot. I don't know if it's related, but you know, like,
okay,
that's just the timeline. It was a week after I'd had the booster shot. I almost passed out. But no one noticed because I didn't know what was going on.
And that's not an uncommon story. And it shouldn't even be controversial.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I'd love to preface because, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's a coincidence. I don't know. But it just happened like a week after I'd had the booster shot. And for a while, you know, like they're like trying to figure out what was going on. I knew that I wasn't feeling good. You know, I was like always feeling dizzy and fainty. And so I had, you know, like the Apple Watch, and, you know, like I saw that, you know, like my heart rate was like spiking. Sometimes it spikes to like 160.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. 170 when I'm not doing anything.
When you're not running, you're just...
Yeah. I'm just, you know, like sometimes I'm sleeping, you know, like it spikes up.
Yeah.
That's I was having like a lot of visit to the ER before I was like noticing, you know, like, oh, you know, like, the heart rate is racing and yeah. whatnot. Yeah.
How's it been since?
I mean, it's a little bit better now. I mean, but I'm not the person I was like 2-3 years ago. And this is like, you know, the first time I'm even sharing. Only people who are like close to me know, you know, but...
Everybody knows now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm not the same person. You know, like, I can't play football anymore. I love playing football. I know you'd be wondering, you know, like he has no muscle and, you know, how will he play football? I mean, the real thing, you know, like
soccer.
Yeah, football.
Yeah. I'm just saying, because, you know, what we like to call it over here.
But you know, how much I know America, you know, loves to think that, you know, America is exceptional, but, you know, like the rest of the world
plays
football. So, and I mean, the American football here, you know, like what did David Beckham say? He's like, you can't call it football when you only kick it every other Christmas. So.
Right. That's a good point. I've always found that curious. It's like you spend more time carrying it or throwing it. You're not... It's not a football at all.
Yeah, but people get, you know, really serious about this because, you know, I think some dude almost punched me in the face.
If you be at all these college campuses, and we all know how serious they take it.
And you know, like lately, you know, like they've been losing the game, so like it's not a good time to pull.
How long will we have you at Mississippi State?
I mean, I'm a tenured track professor, so like that means if I get tenured, which should be maybe in
we'll the next get rid of him.
3 years, yeah, then you all are stuck with me. so yeah, I mean, it's for the long run, unless, you know, like I get an offer that I can't refuse.
There you go. Joe, I would like to open it up to you if you had any questions or anything that you would like to bring up during this time.
I don't have a lot to bring up, but I wanted to kind of touch on a point. You were talking about the place and being here and maybe communicating in a sense with nature. And there's a lot of things I'd like to talk to you. I don't want to use all your time. I know it's valuable while you're here. But there's some things that I think would be very interesting to you in particular. Like, I love the idea of the timeline, the history of a place.
Mm-hmm.
And this place is a good example. We're sitting on top of a fossil bed created when this was an ocean in the Cretaceous period. You know, and we had all these organisms that were alien to us today. We can find their remnants in fossil form. And then later, in more recent history, the Pleistocene, we have, like, large land mammals, you know, mammoths and giant sloths and whatnot. They were here a few thousand years ago. We can find their fossils in the creek out here. In fact, there's some up in this loft on the shelf. Those are fossils. Those aren't recent. Oh. And then still later, within a couple thousand or 1500 years ago or even less, we find bits of artifacts from indigenous native people that were living here, right here. You know, and we find arrowheads and pottery shards and with markings, and we can see how they incorporated bits of fossil bits of shells in their pottery. And then we come here, and now I'm here. I'm an artist, and my son, we're both artists and writers and whatnot. And my son is grown; he grew up here, and in fact, I believe he's taking a class of yours right now. Yeah. Interestingly. But he makes ceramics, and he so this circle is coming back around. Like, he can take things and incorporate them. And it's just a really fascinating idea that there were people right here, right here, probably right here. You know, and then at another time, there might have been a saber-toothed tiger here. And another time, there was a giant aquatic reptile right here swimming around. You know, it's just fascinating. If somehow you could feel that connection to the history of a place in the in this little spot in the universe is just at this given time, and the creates. And then also, we've had numerous artists out here. Mm-hmm. Some have been paid, some have got a stipend, some have not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been having people come out for many years. Some are really well-known musicians in their own right in the world. You know, some are less known, some are writers. We had a wonderful South African researcher come here on occasion. He's 85 years old.
Oh, wow.
You know, but he's also a wonderful artist, and he's been out here staying in one of the structures and telling stories around a campfire in the winter at this time of year about Africa, you know, and he's an old fellow, so it was really cool. You know, I just love the feeling of I hope you'll appreciate the place and the knowledge that there's been a lot of creativity here. Mm-hmm. Even in this little one room, you can look around and feel the energy coming from different people's little pieces of art. And in the building itself.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Built by us, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about it because you had said to me earlier that, you know, like you and Joseph, you know, like built this. And like, it's like, yeah, I was jealous, I'm not gonna lie. I'm like, you know, like, why can't I build something?
Well, it's not, and we're not carpenters per se. Yeah, we're just people, we're artists. Yeah. We need a space, and we want a space, and we want to share a space.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like you said, you know, we can all be superstars with the right, you know, impetus, I guess, you know, the right drive, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Yeah, but it's really well done, and it's beautiful. And I was like thinking, you know, like, what would it take to, you know, like, have something similar, you know, like in Nigeria, and just invite people, you know, like to go there and, you know, like, experience the culture. And the food, you know, like
I like that idea. I like the idea that I'm just a person. Mm-hmm. We're just people in a little country place in Mississippi. And I'm not like Alan's just a person, but I can make a place and invite people here. But I know now that this place has inspired other people in this state and in another countries to do similar things.
Yeah,
that's already happening.
Yeah.
So please,
it's definitely beautiful, and you know, like the history, you know, like the fossil record, and when you were telling that story, you said something that, you know, like things that people would consider alien today. Isn't that fascinating? Because like, what it means is that we have come here, and you know, like, people would lay claim to this land, but a long time ago it wasn't theirs to lay claim to, right?
Everything changes. Everything evolves
yeah,
over time.
And you know, like, it's fascinating, right? But you know, like, all of it, all of this space, you know, like, embody all of those stories, right? And we're building upon, you know, like, each other's stories. And I think that that's like a beautiful thing. I mean, I am Nigerian, and I'm sitting in this space, right? It means I've brought all of my Nigerian experience here, like right now in this room. America and Nigeria is not separated by 10,000 miles. It's not separated by any border.
It's
right?
A really...
Like, it's right here in this room, Nigeria and America, right now.
It's really also, you know, the history here, some of our history in the South has not been good either. We've had, you know, the history of slavery.
Yeah.
This spot right here also, there's around the corner an antebellum mansion. This is, we're on a habitat called Black Belt Prairie. People used to grow cotton in this region. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had slaves potentially living right here also, but on another timeline. Mm-hmm. And now, like you said, we have a Nigerian in here.
Yeah.
He's a poet sharing stories and history. It's a remarkable subject.
Yeah, and also, like, talking about, you know, like, even the history of slavery, I think this is, like, a good juncture, you know, like, to introduce this conversation, because before I came to Mississippi, you know, I've always resisted, you know, like, writing about the African-American experience, or even just, you know, like, the experience as a Black person in America, right, which I am right now, and I'm experiencing all of those things, you know, like, building history to here, but also, like, just engaging with history that is here, right, and there's, like, this palpable energy, you know, like, of ancestorship, you know, like, here in Mississippi, that I hear now pretty clearly, in ways that I didn't hear, you know, like, when I was even in Nebraska. And I don't know, like, I started thinking about what it means to be here and also, like, decoding ancestorship, right? Because I'm like, the people, the enslaved people who were taken from Africa, you know, like, even though I'm not an African-American, but, you know, like, the road leads back to Africa, and those people are my people too, right? Because they were taken from me. Even though there's, like, new history, they've made a new history here, and I have continued whatever history, you know, like, that I've continued, you know, like, down in Africa, but they're also my people. And so, like, being present here, you know, like, gave me the insight and the perspective to say that, oh, you know, like, some of those voices that I'm hearing right now that I don't know what they're trying to say, but I can hear them. That's the voice of my ancestor, too. And it's I think it's fascinating.
It's a very strange divergence in history that now is converging.
It is, right? Because, like, the ways that I'm very comfortable with the food here, I mean, it might sound unsophisticated, right? But, you know, like, the food here actually feels like the food back home. And I don't know if it's, you know, like, because Mississippi is on the Atlantic side of things, right? Nigeria is also, like, Atlantic. But the coconut is, like, similar. You know, like, the mango is similar. The banana is similar. Even the corn is similar, right? But in Nebraska, it was, like, I couldn't eat the corn. I couldn't eat the coconut. I couldn't eat the banana, and I'm not going to talk shit about Nebraska because I love Nebraska, but, you know, like, the food, you know, like, yeah, it's a thumbs down.
That's interesting.
Well, I did want to bring this up during your teaching here at Mississippi mm-hmm. State. What are you teaching, and how's the experience been?
Mm-hmm. I primarily teach craft of poetry to master student, and then I teach intermediate poetry writing to undergrad, and also introduction to creative writing. And I've had the opportunity to teach African American history, literature. And I've been surprised, you know, like, because, I mean, Mississippi gets a bad rap, you know. but, you know, like, the students have been fantastic. Surprising, you know, like, they're not afraid of difference. You know, like, they're willing to learn new things, and, you know, like, willing to, you know, like, step outside of their comfort zone. You know, like, to engage with the rest of the world in ways that I think is very productive. And so it's been really, really enjoyable. The caliber of students that I've encountered, you know, like, they continue to surprise me every semester, and it's, you know, like, it's fun to engage with them, you know, like, to learn from them. I always do this, ask them for food recommendation. I like food. You're not going to be able to tell. It's good genes. But I put a lot of food in this body. It just mm-hmm. doesn't show up. My mom tried, you know, like, she's like, are you still that skinny boy? I'm like, yeah.
I'm sorry.
But I'm trying to let her know that, you know, like, in America, that's good thin. But in Nigeria, that's not good. It means you're famished. You know, it means you don't eat food. Like, so, like, she's giving me a hard time. She's like, when are you going to put up some weight? You know, I'm like, no, I'm fit. Not quite, but, you know.
Fit. Well, I didn't want to take up too much of your time this evening. I wanted to ask three more questions, and we'll wrap this up. Mm-hmm. Question one, for those listening, if they want to follow along mm-hmm. With your journey and with your work, is there a website, social media? How do you prefer people follow your journey?
Yeah, I think I've had a friend, you know, like, create a website for me. You know, there's a friend of mine, Jessica. It's like, I have been telling you, you need a website, yeah, but, you know, I'm very analog. I'm old school. I love to say that I'm like a baby boomer in a young person's body. But I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Thread, I'm on Twitter, and what's this new one called?
Blue Sky.
Blue Sky. It's my name, Sadiq Tsukogi. So that's at Sadiq Tsukogi. That's SadiqDzukogi. Yeah, Sadiq Tsukogi. Tsukogi is a Nigerian name. It's not from Sabia or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Second question to follow that up is if people want to support you as far as maybe buying a book or some of your work, how can they do that?
Yeah, my book, Your Crib, My Qibla, you can find it on Amazon or any other place that you get your book. It's on Barnes & Noble. Is that how you call the place? You can even get that on campus. And nationwide, you can get it wherever you get your books. That's Your Crib, My Qibla, and it's about my daughter, the one I told you about that we lost.
Yes. Yeah. Can we spend the last part of the interview with that?
What do you mean?
just with the work from her death.
You want me to read the...
Open up a little bit about that?
Before we close out, I did have one thing I wanted to bring
up. Sure. Yeah, while he's...
I wanted to make sure everybody... We're going to have a reading December 13th, it's Friday, next Friday at the Starville Community Theater from 5:30 to 7 p.m. The reading will actually start about 6.
The
13th of December. And so we'll have a sort of meet and greet the first 30 minutes, some snacks and whatnot. And beverages, and we'll have a reading and then a question and answer period. But we'd love for anybody to come. It's at 108 East Main Street in Starkville, Mississippi, the Starkville Community Theater. We'll have a poetry reading with Sadiq.
Anything else you'd like to share?
As always, I would like to thank our sponsors and supporters, the Del Rendon Foundation, the Mississippi Arts Commission, and several private donors and sponsors who contribute to this, including yourself, and some I don't mention they don't want me to necessarily or don't, but thank you very much to all of our supporters. Yeah. That makes it possible to host these artists.
Sadiq, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up a poem.
And I appreciate you sharing with us of just right here while we wait, Del Rendon Foundation. If you're unaware of that, follow those guys on social media. You can find them on Instagram, Facebook. We love the Rendons and everything that they have done. Also here,
McGowan Art Retreat and Studio.
McGowan Art Retreat and Studio. What's the website?
Well, my website is joemcgowan.com, and then you can find us on Instagram and Facebook, McGowan, MACGOWN _ art.
And right on. And we appreciate your support of the show. And Sadiq, thank you so much for coming on and sharing a little bit of your story today. Are you ready?
Yeah, thank you. For speaking to me. This has been fun. It's like I pull up one of the poems that I don't like to read.
Well, I appreciate the openness, man.
Yeah. This one is titled Learning About Constellation, and it's from the book Your Crib, My Qibla. And here... it's a poem, you know, like where she's not dead. In 8 days' time, it would be 7 years since she passed. Sorry.
It's okay.
Learning about constellation. Today, Baha is not dead. She's 12 years old, sits beside a flower vase, presses her thumb to the clay. Her heart bursts into a magnificent sun. Water falls, it's warmed all over her satin face. Taller than all her classmates, in the corner she leans her head to white paper, carves moons out of her notebook, while other children sit and listen to the teacher. The class is learning about constellations. She takes colors off a flower, folds it to her skin, a chameleon, gathering coats from leaves. She questions daisies, reveals all suggestions. When he stares into her eyes, Baha grabs a speck of darkness, molds it into a moth, and places it in the darkest point in his eyes. He sits close to his daughter in the yard, joins her and the moths. Baha is not dead. She's walking her way into myth, a world of new constellations where buried milk nourishes the placenta to heal his broken bones, broken eggshell of his heart, mend each back together with the energy of a clock that never moves backward. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Sadiq. Thank y'all for listening.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs, entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.